bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the big show, yes, from the British Tech Network. We're here to discuss the week's technology news and do you want to hear it again? Gordon Bennett, it's pretty light. But thank you, Mr. James T. Ormiston, because he has put us a few bits of news in and hopefully we'll manage to pull out some sparkling discussion from what it is. Joining me in that sparkling discussion, we've got our panel who are superb. Excellent. Possibly gurus, nay, and the best on offer that anyone could get. Or at least tonight, anyway.
Yeah, on a wet Thursday.
On a wet Thursday where no one's gone down the pub. Nick, starting us off, James Hart has got some work to do this evening, so he's had to cry off. But ably taking his spot, back for twice in 2 weeks, which is unheard of, mate. We haven't seen you in ages, and then you come along twice. It's Busboy himself, Christopher Woods. How you doing, mate?
How do, sir? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
Are you underwater in your part of town yet?
I got to say, it got a bit hairy here. I went on the school run to pick the kids up, and a few of the trees were doing the old twisty-turny thing, which I know is a bad sign. And there was a couple of branches came down that were sort of the size of a snooker ball in diameter. And if that had hit some of the little kids, it would have been curtains, I would have said. So I can only imagine what it's like out there. I've only done the school run and back today, and that was bad enough. So you've done Wolverhampton, haven't you, to home?
Yeah. Well, in parts, the Birmingham Road is effectively being annexed by the Grand Union, so it makes it interesting because everyone's pulling over to avoid the massive lakes that have formed, and then there's always one clever bugger like four cars behind, he goes, oh yeah, I'll go out, and then he's it's hilarious.
I was just about to say, for Eric's benefit, the Grand Union is a canal, but then I'd have to explain what a canal was.
It's like a river, but not.
It's like a river, but someone made it. Yeah, there we go.
We have canals. Why don't you think we have canals?
I don't know. I just didn't think. I've never seen a longboat in America when I've been out there.
Well, we got the Panama Canal. I think we built that, didn't we?
Oh, no. Holy crap.
I think you found that with the French, but never mind.
It's not a canal either. I mean, it's a seaway. I mean, canals that I'm talking about are the width of your bedroom.
Well, you want to know how good are they canals? Have you seen the Grand Canyon? That's a canal. That's how good they are.
That's a glacial formation, surely.
Yeah, everything's bigger in America.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's only 6 inches wide, but it's 400 foot deep.
Next to Chris, we've got our doctor, our resident GP, who is here to discuss all our ailments and problems. It hurts when I do this, doctor. Well, don't do that then. Richard Harkness, how you doing, mate?
Good evening. I'm very well, thank you.
Tell us about the week in locum, mate. Have you had any good cases? Don't use names, obviously.
Oh gosh! No, I can't think of anything exciting this week.
You ought to bring an anecdote every week with you. Someone came in to see me, and they said,
"He's a doctor. He should have an antidote, not an anecdote."
Oh, that's bad.
That's painful.
No one talk to Alex for the next 10 minutes for that one. Alex, Fox.
Speaking of Eric, yeah.
All right, how are you doing, mate?
I'm all right, thanks. I'm getting a little grumpy now. You know what? We haven't had a drop of rain here today.
Really?
But we do pay slightly more for our weather, I suppose.
The rain has parted round Essex.
We got nothing. We haven't got a drop of rain. Walk to the school, walk to the other school, you know, not a problem. I didn't even wear a hat.
Excellent. And last but by no means least, Eric Lanigan.
Hello.
How you doing, mate?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, okay. You got good weather there, or sunny and 70?
Actually, I do today. Before that, it's been like almost like dark clouds for the last like 2 weeks, and now it's sunny for the first day.
Excellent. Dark clouds over Frisco, which you're not in anyway. You put a limit, aren't you? But never mind. The week in tech. Brother, who make fantastic typewriters, don't make typewriters anymore. They've been making them for 130 years, and they made the last one this week, and the very last one that they've made is going to the British Museum. There you go. So it's a sad farewell to typewriters. Anyone still use typewriters? NHS must use them, surely. The American government have decided that they want a grenade like the ones that are in the Halo game. So they've put out a project. It's like a Kickstarter thing, I think, but from DARPA. that they want EMP grenades before too long. People who've got Windows 8 phones are having problems with random restarts for no apparent reason. And BA pulled off the blinder of the week because they had a bloke who sent their social media division a very, very expletive-ridden complaint, which they then retweeted to everyone. Bad luck. And a report's coming out saying that school teachers have got loads and loads of tech in their classroom, but know bugger all about using it. Right, should we start with that one?
Yes, why not?
A report has come out that has said, Nottingham University did the original study, I think, they've said that there's loads of investment gone into school classrooms and that kind of stuff with interactive whiteboards, projectors, laptops, all that kind of thing. And half the teachers don't even know how to use them. I thought there might be some parallels here as well, Richard, for NHS with this. But Alex, you said you had a point to start us off.
Well, I go into my kids' schools, and especially the primary schools. And the first thing is you go in there and you think, holy cow, we had a blackboard. And that was it. And if you haven't got young kids in schools today, you'll actually be really shocked when you walk into a classroom and you see what's on offer in that room.
It's all holograms.
Oh, it might as well be. I tell you what, you know, it's not even projectors anymore. It's like the enormous whiteboard, interactive whiteboards, and it works both ways. And they've got this screen that's sort of as big as the whiteboard. The kids have got little tablets. You know, there's not each kid have got one, but it's like it works both ways. All I can ever tell is from when I speak to my youngest, I say, what did they use that for today? He goes, oh, it was raining, so we watched a film at lunchtime.
No.
And that is it. And I'm like, right. So, and occasionally they sort of go, oh, I say, what's wrong? He goes, oh, it was really good today. The whiteboard stopped working. And they haven't got a clue. There's no like, well, what should we do? Pen and paper. No, half the day seems to be wasted by, you know, trying to find someone that can work out what plugs come undone. So it is. I was blown away by the technology they got access to. But like I say, what it's used for is quite shocking.
Chat room's already jumping in with support to that one. Winrodder says, it makes sense. I've got a sister and a brother who are teachers in secondary schools here in Oz, and they're not computer literate at all. So, sad one. Richard, you said you got some parallels with NHS for this.
Well, I was just saying that there's a similar sort of thing happening, like a few sort of forward-thinking places. The consultants getting iPads and things to use at work.
Yeah.
But they've been handed to them and the IT department hasn't set them up at all. You know, they haven't got the NHS email configured on this. They haven't got any useful apps like we were seeing last week. You know, there's tons of things you could do that would be helpful. But hey, you know, you've got something that can play Angry Birds on the war drone, so that's good.
I think we might still be at least like 10 years away before the teachers are of the generation that actually could even teach the kids instead of the other way around. I know when I was that age, it was it was us teaching the teachers. I mean, they didn't know what they were doing with the computers.
Yeah, but I mean, how long ago was that? 10 years?
I don't even know now, like 15, I don't know.
I'm not being facetious. I mean, if you go back to when you were at school, sort of 15, 16 years of age, I could believe that was the case. But I mean, we're 10 years down the line here. You should have expected that if you're going to supply technology, you thought at least they'd have caught up within 10 years. And I mean, I've got to say, I'm the same as Alex. I walk into my son's classroom and they've got digital cameras to take pictures of the kids to make up reports to give back to parents and that kind of stuff. And you look at the pictures that they take with them and it's like, just give me 10 minutes with all of your staff and I promise you I could teach you how to take a decent picture with this thing. And I'm not talking anything, you know, ridiculously complicated. And then they show you stuff up on the board and they've worked out how to use the projector. The interactive white markers, I'd never seen anything upon those boards. They don't even look like they're written on. I'm sure they're not just cleaning them with acetone.
It makes you wonder why they invested all that money in the technology and then and didn't provide the training to go with it. It's just insane, really. Well,
that's classic government establishment, isn't it?
Yeah,
training is secondary.
It's a different budget, mate. You can't put training and purchasing in the same. Another example, and I'm going to get shot because I know some of the teachers from the school that I won't mention at all listen to this show. one of the things they do, whenever we're sort of dragged in there to listen to them tell us how good they are, they do it in the great big hall, and they all wear these wireless lapel microphones. And I've never been to a single one where more than half of them have ever worked. And you sit there and all of a sudden your eardrums are bursting because the amplifier's doing something, and then you can't hear it. And they, I mean, I'll tell you what, some of the technology they've got, if it worked, would be really, really good. But I've yet to see any of it work for a whole hour and a half, maybe. It's just never happened yet.
That's a real generational thing. My dad used to be a deputy head in the school, actually the school where I went, which was nice because I got a lift every morning. But he used to do assemblies, and he used to get up on a stepladder and shout.
Yeah, well, you got a lift every morning and beaten up every lunchtime.
Yeah, and told off twice.
Do you know, we used to have a guy called Vaughan was our headmaster. He's probably dead now. He's got to be. But, I mean, he used to come and stand on the stage, and he used to bring a book that was called Day by Day, and it basically, I used to think that it was like a script or a manual for head teachers for when they had to do an assembly. It's like, talk about this today. It was a list of sermons for teachers.
Yeah, you're not far off. They made them.
Is that what it was?
Pretty much, yeah.
Day by day. And Vaughan used to just stand there and talk to the entire hall. There was no mics. He just had a voice.
Yeah.
I know, it's apropos
project,
of nothing.
Project, boy,
project. Exactly. Speak from your boots.
My first secondary school.
We really are a group of old grumpy bastards, aren't we?
No, I just remember in my first secondary school, we had a headmistress. And, we're old enough to have been caned and all the rest of it.
Mm.
But because she was a headmistress, she didn't believe in beating up people. So if you were in trouble, the punishment was you had to have tea with her.
No!
I just remembered, because the first time I ever got sent to her, I got sat down. I thought, what the hell's going on? And the secretary brought in this bone china, and you had to sit there while she poured you tea and told you why it was really bad, whatever it is you did.
You got
to
say.
It was so embarrassing to have tea with like a 150-year-old woman when you were like 12.
No, you've got to say, if you know you're going somewhere to be punished, and the person that you know is going to punish you offers you tea and biscuits, mate, that's a Jimmy Savile moment.
Oh, well, no.
Jesus.
Wrong sex and just too old.
To be fair, I mean, that's probably more embarrassing and more of a punishment than actually being hit, isn't it, really?
Yeah, we all went back to the classroom and said, yeah, she
gave us the bandwidth.
Eric, you don't need to tell everyone. We know it's crap. We'll sort it out. I need to get my UBW or whatever it is sorted out, apparently.
Yeah, and your CBGBs on
CBGBs, yes, absolutely.
You want to hear just quickly, because this is funny, because I was already thinking about my elementary school before with that the whole Halloween weird thing. But when I think back, I'm surprised how I'm shocked that my school would do this. But I think this is what they need. They had students who were tech people, and I was one of those. So like, when I was in fifth grade, which is like 9 or 10 years old, they would give me an Ethernet card and a can of air and say, you know, go swap this out. And you just walk into the classroom, and sometimes the teacher in the room would be puzzled, but he'd say, I'm here, that, you know, they sent me from the media center. And you go in and unscrew the back of the Macintosh, you know, pop up the old one, put in the new one. I mean, now that I think about it, it must have avoided every warranty in existence. But, you know, it's great that they gave us confidence or had confidence in us to do that. And it was, you know, I certainly learned a lot from that. And that was a cool thing.
Yeah.
You got to have that. So you've got to enlist the students to be able to teach the other students as well as teaching the teachers.
It was before the age of the IT admin.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're restrictive anyway. But Batwing says, let's say now about computer systems that they buy. They aren't compatible each other, so we have to do the same thing many times over. Management also don't ask us what we want. They admit that they can't teach, make, I can't read that word out, decisions. Those who can't teach, administrate, says Windrider.
I've got a piece of history for you. The school I went to was one of the first schools in the region to pilot a new system for electronic registration and marking by a company called Bromcom. And this was the device that people used to use. This was turn of the century. And it was what a proprietary Wi-Fi network. And so you had basically, you know, you had the screen and people would go, here, miss, here, miss, here, miss, and they would mark you off on the screen. And then, of course, you had the lesson plan for when it fell over, which it invariably did.
Which century?
2000, 2001. And they were rolled really out en masse.
Wi-Fi was definitely in its primacy in 1900, wasn't it?
Yeah, right. And then everyone, well, the company that made them realised that they didn't have to make devices, they could just use Wi-Fi.
Windrider wants to know in the chat room if that's your cool thing this week.
Yes, it is. It is my cool thing. Yes.
I had a child in school in 2001.
Really?
Yeah, he just started the nursery in the school.
Blimey.
Bloody hell, you lot are so young.
Well, I'm older than you.
Yeah, but you don't look it.
Yeah, thanks,
2001, mate. You were still in school. And you know when you said, I went to swap out an Ethernet card? I remember a kid getting really punished badly at my school for dropping the typewriter. We had one and it wasn't electric. I think I'm on the wrong show. We have all our yesterdays, I think this should be.
I started working in graphic design in 1987.
Thank wasn't so much design then, it was more etching.
Pretty much, yeah. No, we had a golf ball IBM typesetting machine. And you'd get these golf balls that you'd clip off the top and you'd put it on the machine and then clip the top down again. And there were different fonts on each golf ball. And they were electronic and you'd sit and type. And you'd type the text out for car ads or whatever. And you'd then have to sit and split it all open and justify the text individually so that it fitted in the box with a scalpel and a knife, a scalpel and a ruler. And then you'd take a print of that and that would go off for printing. It was, I mean, but the IBM golf balls were beautiful machines.
The speed those things used to turn around at as well. It was incredible.
I learned to type on those. I mean, you sat and type, you know, a 400-line car advert for Car Nation or something like that, and you get pretty quick at typing after a while. Otherwise, you spend all bloody day doing it.
Fanny, just showing you how times have changed. The little tech people that I think was just like two or three of us in like fifth grade, they gave us the password to every computer in the school. You'd never do that nowadays.
Yeah. Well, you say that. But Ellis has got the passcode to get into the door. And I've said to him in the past, I'm going to bring your book out that you've forgotten it. What's the passcode? And he tells me the passcode to get in the door. And it's every parent and every child must know the passcode.
I don't know the one to my kids' school. They won't let me have it. I have to sit there and wait for them to open the door for me.
Daisy Wheel printers as well. Good grief.
They were brilliant, weren't they?
Daisy Wilf,
I was at a place recently where they had, you wouldn't know, but it had me in stitches because it had, like, you know, the door code. And she said, oh, if you ever want to know it, just look up there. And there was the door code written in the top left-hand corner of the wall.
No, you say that, Richard. There's a company I've been to that are putting a tender together for a seriously big contract. And it's, you know, the old C XXXXXZ turn handle job. That's on the window of the door, to just above the lock. I mean, it's not even like, it's not even an association issue with the two. Why would you have CZ23564Z next to the door handle?
That's brilliant.
Blimey. Fanny Wang has produced some new headphones. These are exceptionally good, apparently. The verdict says that they're great, and even though Fanny Wang's not a real person, they get 4 out of 5 stars. They're £250 for a set of earphones.
I mean, I love the review. It says that the verdict here, it says Fanny Wang might not exist. The name might be ludicrously provocative and the noise cancelling might not be great, but for some reason, we still love these headphones.
Yeah. Would you pay 250 quid for Fanny Wang headphones?
People pay more for Beats.
Well, I mean, now you say the Beats. Now, this is the thing that inspired me with this sort of story was I went down to HMV the other day with Ellis, and while he's sitting playing on one of the games on the demo stations, I went over and thought, I'm going to try the Beats out, because if they're really, really good, then fair enough, I might buy a pair. And I picked up the £350 Beats, the big heavy metal ones. I mean, they're not heavy metal, but, you know, very heavy, made from metal. And I put them on, and I listened to the stock music that was in there. I thought, oh, that's okay. And then they've got a thing where you can plug your iPhone in and listen to your own music, so you can do the contrast. And I thought, actually, this is really nice, really, really good. And then I thought, I wonder. I went round the other side, and I picked up the Sennheisers that were £54. And they were a closed-cup earphone as well. Put those on, plug them into my phone, listen to it. Couldn't tell the difference. Could not tell the difference between
no.
the two. Really? Honestly?
No, couldn't. No, no. I went to Micro Amvika, RIP, on Tuck Court Road, did the same thing with my £35 in-ear Sennheiser headphones. It was night and day. My Sennheisers beat every single £300 pair of headphones there. All the Beats ones. They're just terrible. Really bad value for money.
They're really quite bass heavy, I think, the Beats ones, aren't they? There's not much mid-range on them.
We're in danger of sounding like a real bunch of old farts here. Oh. Be careful, because we don't go, it's terribly loud music, and you can't hear the words. So be careful.
Bandwidth
drop again. I said, you can't... I said...
What? Speak up!
I said, we're in danger of being old farts here.
What?
It's terribly heavy on the bass, and you can't hear the words.
What?
I don't know what the hell they're talking about these days.
What? Is that your mother?
Well, these Sennheisers I'm wearing are... How old are they? I bought these maybe 20 years ago. I reckon I paid £300 for the ones I'm wearing now 20 years ago. And I've bought various things on whims, and I always come back to these. These are so much better than anything else I've ever bought.
And these headphones, when I bought them, were £180. They've gone up now because everyone's got no money left. But you can still buy these for less than a set of Beats, and these will roundly beat the Beats. To
depends what you
phrase.
Want. If you want air into your ears, you can't wear heavy bass-driven headphones. It doesn't
work. That's okay, because they also make the HD25s, which are the best closed-cup earphones in the price range, in my opinion. Or you can buy Audio-Technica, or you can buy AKG and be just as happy for less money.
The B&W P5s, I love them. I think they're absolutely gorgeous. I never thought I would spend that much money on a pair of headphones in my life, but I just fell in love with them.
Have you told your wife?
Yeah. She knows. She went ballistic, you know. But there you go.
Eric, go on, save us, mate. Stop us being all grumpy old farts.
I never waste money or even look at some of these things like the Beats or the things that are very fashion oriented and iPod oriented. I've always looked at what the professionals use, what's considered a flat response curve, flat EQ response, studio monitors like the professionals wear. Because otherwise you're always going to get extreme coloration in one way or another. And what might sound great to you for like hip hop, where you've got like extreme bass and you've got amazing bass in these headphones and maybe even some great treble to show like the little cymbal stuff, but you might be missing the entire mid range and or all sorts of frequencies that you would not hear depending on the type of music you're listening to. If you then put on a CD that was like an orchestra or strings or classical or something, or even just like guitars with mid range, like crunchy distortion or something, they might sound completely different. So that's why I think it's just a better theory to go with what the professionals use, and then just use your EQ from song to song or from album to album.
Yeah.
That's all very good, but when you get to our age, as long as it's loud.
What? I read a review that someone wrote on HeadFi. Now, HeadFi are nerds about audio gear, and someone reviewed the 1001s, and the summary is that they didn't excel in any one particular area, but they made it sound enjoyable to listen to. And we've got to remember that most people are listening to stuff on iPods that they download it, so it's not going to be very good quality, is it? So I'm happy if they're spending more on headphones, because it means that that's the gateway drug to buying really good headphones. So in that respect, he's got to be patient, but things will get better.
You got to hope so.
In every headphone discussion, I have to yell at and criticize Dolby for fumbling one of the greatest technologies ever invented for headphone and music. They could have had this in every iPod and in every music player, and they didn't, because they wanted too much money for the license fee. And that is Dolby headphone. Yeah, they've actually stopped making. Last time I tried to buy a Dolby headphone little hardware device that did fiber optic out of the Mac and then into that, and it was like $99, and it would do the full simulation of the official Dolby headphone. And in 2008, they'd already discontinued that. And you see fewer products now with Dolby headphone than there were in 2005. It makes such a difference. if you're listening to music on headphones, you're not hearing it the way anyone intended, not the sound engineer, not the band, because you're hearing it beamed directly straight into your ears with no reverberation at all. And the frequency response is very different than if you hear something a few feet away and with the expected sound stage, the placement of the speakers and the characteristics of the room and everything. And one of the things that makes headphone listening fatiguing and can damage your ears faster is because you don't hear those auditory cues of loudness in the room. Like a loud source in real life normally echoes or has other properties that you don't hear with headphones. So something like a really loud cymbal or a hi-hat or something, or a really loud guitar, you might not even notice is destroying your ears because you don't hear any echo whatsoever. And it just sounds like it because it's just being shot directly into your ears. So Dolby headphone, again, it virtualizes a room, creates virtual speakers in front of you in a virtual soundstage, and you can select the amount of reverb and the size of the room. But I've always found doing comparisons that made such a difference. And I'm just angry that still no one has this.
But my Yamaha DX1
of the new phones
system
got this in. Is it the Windows phone?
Stay one at a time because you've talked over each other. Richard, start us off.
I'm sure one of the new phones, maybe the Windows phone, the Nokia.
That could be. I think HTC also has a deal. They do some Dolby technologies, I think, and Dolby's been putting their stuff into some Windows laptops, but they still require a hardware chip. So you have to have like the Dolby sticker and the Dolby chip inside. It's stupid. They went for non-standard, very high price rather than just standardizing it and making sure everyone could have access to this great technology.
What did you say, Alex?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't use it very often, but I've got a Dolby 7.1. It's not an amplifier. It's whatever the thing that does your After Pro Logic, Digital Pro Logic. I can't remember what it's called. And that's got a headphone setting, which basically you throughput normal music and it does an artificial DSP for headphones. So it gives you the virtualization of the space that you don't get if you're wearing headphones.
And by the way, that's the other thing that's missing. Not only should we have been having Dolby headphone in every iPod since 2001, but also music should have already been mixed exclusively in 5.1 surround, which sounds amazing, phenomenal in Dolby headphone. Better than any sound system that in anyone's actual real life living room, as opposed to like a special sound listening environment that I've ever heard. And I mean, if you listen to 5.1 Dolby simulated in Dolby headphone, again, it just sounds so much better than hearing stereo directly into your ears beamed in a way that it was never designed to be mixed or heard. So it's interesting and I've said what I wanted to say.
It's funny, just saying that, the headphones, they cost me a fortune and they got broken. I bought one of my kids. It's got 5.1 from, I think it's the PS3. And that's actually got 5.1 built into the headphones. And it really does make a big difference.
I can't see how that's working, though. Is this coming out through USB or is this coming out through analog? Because it can't be coming out through analog.
It comes out from a digital output in, I think it's... Is it a fiber optic output on the PS4? I think it's PS4. It might be Xbox because they've got them both. And it goes into, it looks like a box with different outputs. And then you've got a USB from that box to the headphones. And it's got a mixer. It's actually got, it's a similar DSP. I'm trying to think who make it. Triton, one of those. Very, very expensive digital headset.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, Triton do make a headset that has proper Dolby Pro Logic built into it, and it's got a proper little box that does all the decoding and dematrixing. Well, it's a fantastic headset, and you cannot buy it anywhere anymore.
Well, you can. Well, you can buy a broken one off me if you want. The spare parts are very hard to get hold of as well, because I've been writing to them because in Britain, it's not, Triton doesn't sell directly. It's sold by, I can't remember the company, but it's sold by a third party who don't have spares. And if you go onto the Triton website, they only have spares for the lower end. They don't sell spares. You have to buy the whole box if you want to get it repaired. And I'm not spending another 150 quid on something that will get broken.
Has anyone tried one of these external DACs that you can buy? I've certainly seen there's a one Arcam, the British audio company, make a little like little black box that you can plug into your... I don't know if it's just the iPhone or whether it's other things as well, and then you put your headphones into the other side of it. Anyone give them a go? Or?
No, I haven't heard of them.
No, it's supposed to be really good. But it's like improves...
What was it called?
I'll look it up for you. It's an Arcam box.
See, one of the things that interests me with all the money that, I mean, if you take the Beats headphones, they're just stereo headphones from what I can work out. You haven't got any kind of surround soundy stuff. They're just talking about compensation for noise values and noise cancelling for outside and that kind of stuff, and that's it. But what surprised me is that you do get cup earphones that will give you the sensation of getting noise from different areas on the same side. It's not just left and right switching like a stereo would be. You're getting tiny little emitters that are in the front and the rear of the cup that are making you feel about stuff that's more behind you and more in front of you. And why has no one linked that to accelerometers in devices? Or put an accelerometer in the headphones so that when you are playing a game, you get the sense of something being behind you with headphones on it. And then when
gyroscope.
And when you turn, you can then get, so if you're playing with your iPad and you've plugged your headset in, you're getting even to the 30-pin connector or the lightning connector. As you do the turning around, that corrects itself and you get this 360 audio, because that would make a much better gaming experience. And it's so easy to do, you would have thought. But no, they should be able, the accelerometer is already in the devices that you're using, whether you're using iPad, iPhone, Android device, Kindle Fire, etc. Well,
actually, Ewan, I think you're seeing right there, and that is a really cool idea. I think
I should have patented that then. Is that what you're saying?
I'm sorry?
I should have patented that. Is that what you're saying?
That's out of there now, Phil.
If not already, then I think very soon those CPUs in the iPads and tablets will be able to process that. Because like you said, it shouldn't have to be in the headphones, because the iPad or whatever tablet you have already has accelerometer, gyroscope, orientation around gravity. It's got all this directional stuff already in it. So in theory, since it's already reading those measurements and using it for, I think you're picturing like one of those games where it's like, was it like Nova Force or something? It's like the Halo clone that was one of the first that did, like, you can look around with the iPad or iPhone around you in a 3D space, and it's almost like virtual reality. So yeah, that'd be awesome if you put on the headphones and then like the monster, like as you pan around physically in the room, you hear the monster's growl, like is now behind you and now is this way and that way, and the shots are coming from this way. That would be really cool. I think that probably will happen eventually. It's just going to take more CPU power.
I would just see that as really doable right now.
It probably is doable right now. That sounds very doable.
Yeah.
Well, breaking news from 2011, Apple patented virtualized audio.
Oh, no!
I guessed that.
Yep, Apple reveals a directional audio interface and an invisible spatial arc. In June 2011, the USPTO published a patent application from Apple that reveals various concepts behind a newly advanced directional audio interface. And you can see the man holding what looks like an iPod.
Bollocks. That might just be Shake the Shuffle.
But it talks about spatial audio and configuring the audio and manipulating it psychoacoustically based on how you're holding it.
We've got a medical question in the chat room, Richard, which has come in, not off the press for you. Batwinch says, wouldn't that make you travel sick due to inner ear and brain stuff?
I don't think it should, no, because you're just mimicking what you say, like the normal world, aren't you, really?
The big problem would be if
it wasn't properly coordinated and there was a mismatch, you know, like a delay, that would make you feel quite weird, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, the problem that you get with travel sickness and seasickness and that kind of stuff is to do with visual changes compared to the balance structure within the semicircular canals within the ear. So the semicircular canals are saying that you're moving and your eyes are saying that you aren't.
Yeah.
So that's why when you go above decks, you feel better. As long as you've got a screen whereby when you're moving, it's giving you the sensation of moving, then you won't have a problem. If that's, as you say, if that sensation of moving stops, but the ear knows you're moving, then you could end up with seasickness.
Yeah, definitely.
Or you could just do things in the real world and you'd be all right.
So I haven't really seen many games at all that take that much advantage of the
Which it's kind
of gyroscope effect that much.
Well, no. What struck me was I was watching something the other day, and I can't remember what it was I was playing on, but I just thought to myself, everyone has gone ballistic on graphics and the virtual reality idea of moving your head around and the vision changes. Surely the best thing to have done, and the easiest thing to have done, and the cheapest thing to have done, and the most effective thing would have been the audio.
They do sort of in car racing games, don't they? They do sort of Doppler effects in racing and things like that, which it really does add to the thrill of what you're doing, because it's one dimension that you can actually feel that you're traveling in, even if you're not.
Actually, you know what's interesting, I guess? It's possible that unlike listening to music or a movie or something where the perspective of the viewer is locked in place relative to the action on the screen, it might be that if you're in a free-moving environment like a first-person shooter where you have full control spatially, it might just not be necessary. And what I'm saying is, one of my picks coming up is the new Call of Duty, Black Ops 2, and I've been playing also Borderlands. I've been playing a lot on headphones for both first-person shooters, and I'm surprised. I've got the headphones on, and because I'm able to rotate in 3D and turn in the direction that I hear the sound, I've never actually noticed consciously. I've never said, "Oh, that's unrealistic," because I'm only hearing left and right stereo. And it should be surround, or it should be simulated surround or something. It seems to work. So that could be all it is, that as long as you can rotate yourself in the game, in the environment, and the left and right stereo accommodates that, and you can hear the monster or whoever, you know, whip around you in a panoramic, maybe that's all we need to create that mental effect.
Could be. Sax in the chat room says, is what you're describing the Jedi training orb?
Mm-hmm.
There we go. We had to get Star Wars in somewhere, didn't we?
Oh, the bandwidth died.
We had to get Star Wars in somewhere, didn't we? We had to get Star Wars in somewhere, didn't we? We had to get Star Wars in there somewhere, didn't we?
Yes, we all did.
There we go.
Right. You've only just come back in, so we're all now.
In the UK this week, there has been a People's Operator launched. This is a phone operator, which is allegedly fairly charity-based. When you buy their service, you're going to get 25% of your money is going to go to a foundation, which has been set up by the People's Operator, which allows to go to charitable organisations to further their causes. And you can allocate a further 10% by your choice. And they're aiming to be an ethical UK cell phone provider, mobile phone provider. Their prices are fairly similar. They're piggybacking off the Everything Everywhere network to get what they want, but they've got to do it. They're doing it from they're going to be ethical. Can you have an ethical cell phone provider?
I think that's illegal in the US.
No, it's just illegal to be ethical.
It's just illegal to compete, isn't it, Eric?
All of the above.
I was dead. Yeah. No, I mean, I picked this story as well because I was dead interested to see what, this affects us here in the UK, so we should talk about it anyway. But I'm interested from Eric's viewpoint, definitely, because, I mean, these kind of organisations just, they would never exist. They would never last a heartbeat in America, surely.
Yeah, if they could even, look at what you'd have to buy for Spectrum, even to get a new service off the ground. You're talking like $7 billion just for a swath of 3G or 4G spectrum, and that's having built out no towers and no backhaul infrastructure.
Well, these guys are piggybacking, though. So the Everything Everywhere network has got their 4G spectrum that they've got already on loan from Ofcom, and they are using that. We get a lot of piggybacking here in the UK. I'm on the 3 network, and when my cell signal drops out on 3, it's actually taking from O2's network to supplement mine. So this is a common thing. I don't think you probably have piggybacking, do you?
I think Metro PCS and a couple of small rural providers do, but never with data.
No.
Well, I think we have piggybacking going back to the days where we only had the monopoly of BT. And then they changed the law for all of telecommunications, saying that BT had to give other people access and charge an access rate to other companies. Because that's how all the alternatives to BT came in. They still all run on BT. I mean, 95% of everything you get now as a landline, whoever you think you're going with, you're still running on BT. It's just they're taking a cut. I mean, maybe that's the same with the mobile operators. There's a law that says that you must make yourself available for this system. The only thing I'd say about these people is I think they probably are ethical because they certainly didn't waste any money on the launch event.
No.
If you look at the picture, they're the in a pictures. Tent with really dodgy carpet, a really, really lousy...
They're in somebody's basement.
Somebody got married and the company left the tent up for an extra day so they could go and launch this idea.
You heard a flash mob? This was a flash product launch. Flash launch.
They haven't even folded the tablecloth square.
But you know what's even worse? If you look in the top of the picture, they've got the lights from the glitter ball still on the ceiling.
I was sitting thinking that was lighting and then I've just realised it's not. It's the glitter ball, yes.
So, I mean, good luck to them.
It is the glitter ball in the middle of the marquee. It's a wedding marquee,
isn't it?
Excellent.
But this isn't anything new. Years ago, and I was just checking online, they still exist. I used to get my mobile through a company called Green Mobile, and they do a similar thing. They piggyback off another network, and they give 5% of their turnover to charity, and they claim to be carbon neutral as well. So I don't know if that's the only one, but certainly this service isn't a new thing.
No.
So, but it wasn't, I don't think it was particularly great value for money, if I remember rightly. And you were a bit behind on terms of new handsets and things like that.
They do have pay monthly and they do have pay as you go. That you're starting at 7.5 pence for a single text and 12.5 pence for voice calls. Per minute, presumably, which is pretty.
Are they actually cheaper, or is it just
no?
So that's unfortunate. They're not actually competing on price, and maybe that's how they're getting by. What?
I don't see how they can if they've got to pay 90% of every penny they charge you out to whoever the actual main company is. They've got very, very little to play with.
So 25% of what you pay goes to charity, which seems like a little bit of a strange thing. You'd think that if it said people's operator, you'd think that meant that it was going to be something that everyone could afford, when in fact it's a possibly even more expensive program, but then 25% goes to charity. That's a bit weird. I would rather see price competition, or rather, I would rather see a service that really did open up high speed broadband to anyone at rock bottom prices.
I'd rather see people that live on the street going into gulags.
What's a gulag? Don't get started on that. If you read the websites, 25% of profits.
Yes.
Through their foundation. So they keep hold of the money until they make the choice of who to give it to. You can give 10% after VAT if
to your own
spend.
Person. Yeah.
So really 10% of your own spend is going to be less than 25% of the profit. So it depends on how people want to do it, I suppose, isn't it?
It's probably just a shell corporation for AT&T.
Well, the company itself is
the charity is one of their own back in the United States after the money is like washed through various offshore holding corporations and finally comes back to AT&T.
The company itself is an LLP, which is, there's not many large LLPs, I don't think, in the UK operating, but there's also two other businesses. There's the People's Operator Foundation, which is there where the money goes before it's given to people. And then they've got Holdings. The Holdings is just a regular limited company.
I've been watching Breaking Bad lately, trying to catch up on 5 seasons of it so far. And I've got to say, I look at most corporations now and think they're a meth lab.
If they wanted to be truly ethical, they would have set up as a cooperative or a mutual. There's no beating about the bush around that. But
or a meth lab.
Or a meth lab, yes. Come join Meth Lab Co.
Polos
free calls to your dealer. Mm.
There is the phone co-op as well, isn't there? Or do they just
The co-op don't... I mean, there's Charium has already jumped in with that one earlier on. They said that Asda and Tesco do it. It's amazing that co-op didn't enter the mobile phone market as well.
Oh, but they have their MVNO. I even have a phone co-op mug.
Well, there you go.
And in fact, the phone cooperative, because I work for a cooperative, not like High Street Cooperative, but our business is a co-op. It's an IPS mutual. And the phone co-op were actually kind of subsumed by Co-op Group, which is the place in Manchester that does all the retail supermarkets and that, good with food. And they're going to become Cooperative Telecoms. They've made incredible progress in the past 12 months. And they're a very good operator. And they're ethical. They are actually ethical.
Yeah, I've just looked at their website. They do mobile, landline and broadband now.
I've in the past 12 months, I've become a huge proponent of cooperatives. Because once you understand exactly what they stand for, it's a very worthwhile decision to make.
Excellent.
Switch to Co-op Energy as well. They're the cheapest in the market. Good times. I don't get any money, unfortunately, for plugging them, but they're really, really good. But it's a real shame Peoples Up didn't become a co-op.
Yeah.
Never mind.
That wasn't what they wanted.
No, exactly. They want money. Money, money, money.
Must be funny. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by the UK2.net team. They're superb. We've got no end of connections with them. We've had it for 3 years. We're going to get it for another 2 years. They've chucked out 1,000 domains this week at £1 for .co.uk's, and you actually got your 20% off with our code anyway if you did it. You should have gone with them. You should have had it, but now they're gone. No more £1.co.uk's. But UK2 is still there. Go to our website, click on the sponsors link, and all the instructions, all the offer codes are there, how to go through. If you don't use our click-through, we don't get the kudos for it. So please, please, please make sure that you you do follow up on that and go through there, and we will get kudos. We don't get any money from them. We just get kudos. And they picked up 114 terabytes last month. Thanks, guys. Yeah.
That's quite heavy.
That was a load. That was a hell of a load. And someone said, because I said, oh, I just presume then that we stuck it in with, because it was the iOS glitch where it had repeated downloads. Maybe that's what's caused the big surge in the last 2 months. But someone said, have you checked the dates? And I've checked the dates and actually they don't line up. So we're having a good look this month and see if we're higher. But UK2 never batted an eyelid. They didn't lose service. We didn't have any problems at all. A couple of people said that the downloading was slow. I've had two emails this week saying that downloads last week were slow, but I've asked out everyone else on Twitter and stuff, and they said, no, we're fine. They give us a dedicated server. You can get some great deals on dedicated servers with them, and they've got Site Builder, which is a wonderful application for putting up a very quick and simple website if you want it. So give them a try. UK2.net. We love them to bits. And also, you can vote for us in the European Podcast Awards. If you go to our homepage, britishtechnetwork.com, on there, there'll be a banner. And the 6 shows have been nominated this year. We only had 3 in there last year. And we finished 3rd in the UK category. The Max Show got 3rd, despite the fact we polled more votes than the others. But never mind. I'm not bitter. I only mention it every week. And all you've got to do is go to British Tech Network and click on the show. And then it takes you immediately to the voting page. Give us 5 stars or whatever stars you want to give us and click vote now, and then that's it. You can subscribe to the newsletter or not. And you can do as many of the shows as you like. You can do all 6 of the shows that are nominated. It's the Max Show, the Big Show, the Photo Show, the Media Show, the iOS Show and the Gamer Show are all in there. Give us a vote. We much appreciate it. But if you close your browser down and then open it up again, you can vote for all the shows again. There we go. So I expect all of you to vote for the shows 3 times a day, minimum, for every show. So that's only 18 clicks. Come on, you can do that.
What were you saying about that 140 terabytes of bandwidth last month?
Oh, yeah, that could be just people coming to our site
Just to vote.
That'd be cool. we need as many as we possibly can. Please, please, please vote for us. Make sure we're right up there. And the thing is, as well, with the category, I think the category is only 5 that they choose from. So we've got a real possibility of just flooding that category with shows so that we have to win. We have to win. We have to have the podcast of the year this year. Promise. I think the voting stops at the end of the month or at the end of middle of next month, and then they don't decide until February, but there we go. We could be off air and banned by that point.
Rigging the vote.
Please vote. Please vote. EU Podcast Awards, our homepage. Thank you. Right. Cool things. Mr. Christopher W., do you have a cool thing? I did ask you very late. Yes. So.
No. I expect it being asked now. So, yeah, I do have a cool thing. And Eric will hate me because it's a Behringer device, but they were, you know.
Right.
Okay, it doesn't produce any sound, so you don't have to worry about that. It's their CT100 cable tester. Hang on a second, let me make sure that I can see what I'm seeing. It's really good. And it's so cheap as well, but it's amazing what it does. I have an XLR plugged in to demonstrate, but it's got a quarter, what, 1/8 inch, the Americans. But it can send test tones down it as well, And if I turn it on, it would help. This is a faulty cable, and you can see that not all the correct lights are lit up, but you can, depending on how you turn it on and which buttons you push down, it does various magic tricks, but it's got, it can test everything.
Don't faulty cables kind of out themselves in different ways?
But you want to know what's wrong with it, don't you?
But invariably, if you don't test your cables, they tell you they're broken in the middle of a show, which is never very handy. But this thing is fierce handy. It's like it was like 25 quid or something.
Is it preemptive? Does it tell you a cable that's on the way out?
Well,
it will.
It will if you kind of do that and the lights light up like Christmas trees and then you go, oh, this is broken, and you throw it in the bin. Or not, as I, because I never throw any broken cables away, apparently. But there we go. But if you do any work with audio, and just MIDI as well, so if you do any work with audio, really useful.
Did I see on the top, does it also have RCA style jacks?
It's got everything, mate. It's got MIDI, standard 3.5 mil.
Phono.
RCA.
Yeah.
Then on the other side, it's got 1/8 inch. Sorry, when my camera decides to refocus. And then on the front, it has XLR and standard TRS.
1/4 inch.
And that is really cool. I mean, for that price, you almost can't afford not to have one of those if you work with audio.
Yeah, right. Look, and it even has a belt buckle.
Oh, my life. Have you ever put your belt through that? Go on, own up. On a Saturday morning.
Nerdiest belt buckle in the world.
You got your utility belt out. And you. Oh, it's got a clip as well. It's not just a through
point. It's got a clip. It's got a, awesome. There we go. Hang on. Oh, yes. There we go.
So yeah, there
just,
you go.
Just testing my cables. Yep.
So those for 25 quid, you can look that cool.
Oh, what, this? Oh, this is my Behringer CT100. Yeah.
There's a point from Paul in the chat room. Is there a reset button? I'm not sure whether he's referring to the podcast, the chat room, or that device.
You're in luck. There is a reset button.
Oh, no, Paul. That's the entire chat room is now 25 quid out of pocket.
But what's most useful about this is that as well as testing cables, it can send test tones. So you can test your setup, which is also useful really cool. if you've got like a home cinema setup and you've got one dodgy wire, you know you've got a dodgy wire somewhere, you can go through and try them.
That's got to be a breakthrough price, because I remember seeing those, that kind of thing for like $200-$300 before.
Yeah, right. I mean, people at ART make them and they're bound to be better and they probably make a cup of tea whilst you check your cables. But this thing does what it says on the tin. This is the good thing about Behringer. They copy stuff without mercy, but sometimes they make really good product.
It's theft. Is that what you say?
Basically, yeah. They're massive IP thieves.
Oh, the reset button.
We're going to get sued.
In my opinion, allegedly. There we go. We're covered.
You are right that we're not going to be on it. Yeah, this time next month, I guess.
Vote for us quickly. Vote now. Vote often.
Behringer do make great stuff. The only problem with their stuff is the fact that actually what happens is that you order it and then it doesn't come for like 6 to 8 weeks or something because there's just no supply. They've decided not to make any that month. It's like a meth lab. It's like a meth lab, I'm telling you.
Let me throw in my caveat, though, because you were right. I do have a Behringer mixer, and I've said before how much I don't like it. It's full of noise. It's full of strange distortion and noise. I have the Behringer Xenix X1622 USB.
With the classic Xenix British Prees.
Yes.
Which are made in Taiwan.
British EQ, I think, is they call it.
British EQ, yeah. And look, and it's really... Really, it just sits right there. It barely weighs a kilo at all. Yeah. Wear any head if you like. Yeah. But that's my cool thing.
You're on a Behringer mix, you know. So they're great. Love them to bits. Does all the mix minus everything. And you can even use it as a hat. Thank you, Chris. Super. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Richard, what do you have for us, mate? You're very serious there, pal. Are you serious? Are you buying in the middle of buying a Behringer at the minute? Or you just got on mute?
What's that?
No, you were silent on. You're all right now.
I'm all right now.
Yeah.
Do you have a cool thing for us, Richard?
Oh, right. I wanted to just recommend something to watch and then show you something that's a cool little a stocking filler as well for Christmas. So the TV show Gadget Man by Stephen Fry. I don't know if anyone's been watching that.
Right, yes.
That's great fun. you know, I think anybody who watches this is probably going to enjoy it. And Stephen Fry is a bona fide gadget enthusiast. There's no question about that. So well worth a watch. And you know, even I saw some stuff on there that I hadn't seen before. So well worth it. The little stocking filler for somebody, I just came in the post today, which is a Christmas present. I'll have to be quiet about this. Yeah. But for me, the iPad mini just wasn't small enough. So I picked up one of these instead. You can see that.
What is it?
I assure you, it's absolutely brilliant. And the level of detail is just superb.
Are you unwrapping someone else's Christmas present at this point?
Yeah, I am.
So there his ex-wife.
Oh, it's an Apple Air.
But hang on a minute. Oh, come on.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. It's a mirror.
Oh,
very good.
Very good.
So it's a vanity mirror for ladies.
They're going to get sued big time.
That's got MacBook written on it with an Apple logo on it. That's got kill me.
Yeah, exactly. So I had to have one before they were crushed.
Where did you buy it?
Amazon.
Oh, brilliant. I've got the Lightning connector that's come out.
£10.
All right. Okay, we'll stick a link in the chat room. We'll have bought their entire stock before the show's finished. Because I'm going to buy one of those for the wife. She'd love it. No, she'd
like so Christmas gifts.
It'd piss her off immensely, but I'd enjoy it pissing her off.
Speaking of IP theft.
Go on. Well, speaking of IP, said the man with the Behringer mixer on his head, doubling his hat. Of course. Alex.
It's very comfortable.
What have you got for us, mate?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I got this little present. You know, a little portable thing that I've been working on. Right. So I've got that. Right. You know, I mean, I haven't got a belt mixer, but it doesn't come with a belt clip.
I was just about to ask if it had a belt clip.
It comes with a forklift truck.
For those on the audio podcast, why?
It's a 1940s five valve radio.
Is that walnut or Bakelite?
No, this is. Wood? Wood?
It's walnut.
It's pretty
quick,
blimey.
Does it have DAB?
DAB. It hasn't even got a bloody aerial. Oh. It's got four knobs, and it's got long wave and about 500...
So's knobs. This show, mate.
Boom, boom. That was actually very good. Well done.
Four knobs and a radio. There we go. There's the title.
We're here all night, ladies and gentlemen.
It turns out it's a Philco. And it turns out, a British design Philco, that my uncle, and I've only got two uncles in the whole world, my uncle was very likely the designer of this very radio, because he was the chief Philco designer in the UK in the late 40s, early 50s.
Right.
So I've sent some information. I'm going to find out if this was one of his very first designs for a Philco radio. And that is complete and utter coincidence. I didn't know that he would have done that one, but there you go. Right, my true, and I owe this to Tone in the chat room, because he mentioned it on the media show inadvertently, and also my father, because of I was bragging. I said, oh, I've heard about this TV catch-up app, and it's something you can do on the internet, and there's an app available, and it's for the iPhone and the iPad. And I was like, really? Because he lives in the sticks, and half the time the telly don't work, and this, that, and the other. And he sort of pulled out his iPhone. He goes, what, this one?
Oh, he did you.
Yeah. I said, how long you had that then? Thinking it was brand new. He said, oh, about 4 months. So it proves that I'm really up on the ball with all this modern tech. But I'm really, really impressed with it. It's just called TV Catch-Up, tvcatchup.com. I'm afraid it's British only, but most of the best things are.
Well, unless you got a tunnel.
Oh, you could have a tunnel, I suppose. But legally, it's British only. And it's really good, because I looked at some of the catch-up things on the on that internet thing, and you can get various BBC players, and you get an ITV player, and you get a Channel 4 player. But this is literally everything that's on Freeview. And I was like, wow, that is really, really impressive.
Yeah, you can watch it live as well. I watched the rugby during the summer live.
But Oh, so you even knew about it. Oh, my God, I'm behind the time.
No, but no, anyway. No. I watched TV catch-up on the net, and I actually used Wirecast because Drew, one of the listeners, is in Sweden, and his ability to get rugby is just zero. So I actually broadcast the game using Wirecast so that he could watch it.
Allegedly.
No, I definitely. No, I really did. Oh, I'm not making it up.
Well, I want different lawyers. Anyway, so it's got 50 channels, and it's really, really good quality. It works on 3G as well, and it works really well on 3G. So 50 channels, straight to your phone. Anything that you can basically watch on Freeview, you can watch on your phone anywhere, anytime. And I was really amazed. I mean, obviously, everyone other than me knew about it. But when I found out, I was really, really happy about it. So I would recommend TV Catch-Up. But there's the iPhone app and there's the iPad app, and they're completely free. That's the most amazing thing about this.
Whole service is free.
Completely free service.
Yeah, right. Tone in the chat room says that's tvcatchup.com is what you want. Very good. Thank you very much.
There's also an XBMC plugin if you use XBMC, which is really good.
I mean, you knew about it as well. Eric, you live in America. Did you know about it before me?
No.
Thank God. Because he would have taken his teddy home if you had.
Well, I'll tell you. I'll take my radio to bed with me.
Mr. Lanigan, what do you have for us?
I have not a pick, like a full endorsement, but just a little bit of first experience with Call of Duty Black Ops 2, which just came out. Already beat, you know, the all-time records. They got like $500 million in sales in the first 24 hours. Yeah. You know, it's crazy. And it's getting good reviews.
The pre-sales were 25 minutes or something, weren't they?
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, I'm not that pleased with this game, though, especially the single-player mode. I've only done a few minutes of the multiplayer yet because it's got a whole new leveling up system than Modern Warfare 3 did. So I've got to learn a whole new system just to play the same types of games. It's the same, you know, capture the flag and defending the bases and stuff. It's the same game, but, you know, a whole new system of upgrades to learn. So that's one of the reasons I haven't done that yet. Single player, though, I've probably played through maybe 4 hours, maybe 5 hours of single player over the last couple of weeks or whenever it came out. And God, it's boring. It's so boring.
Oh, right.
And this, I just came from playing Borderlands 2, which you've heard me rave about. And last week, I even talked about the downloadable content of the season pass. They now have a second downloadable content for that that's out. That's a first-person shooter that's funny, imaginative. I like that it's over the top, so you got better, crazier weapons and that do more, and you know, like lasers and crazy things with like infinite magazines and stuff. Back to this realism. Is boring. I mean, you walk at half the speed, the guns reload slower, you know, you're restricted by all these real life things in reality. You can't jump infinitely off of infinite heights and not die. But really the biggest thing is, even compared to the other modern warfares, or rather the other Call of Duties, it's just a boring, boring single player campaign. It is so on rails. It's holding your hand the whole way. It's like, now shoot them. Now walk up there. Now shoot that guy. Now go around that bin. Oh, don't stay out of the light. Stay out of the light. Okay, now go. Now stay to that light. Okay, now go. Now get them. Now stab them. Now do. And it's like I'm watching a boring movie. Yeah. It's just full of all this technical military jargon and these different names of fictional characters going on. I have no idea what's going on, nor do I care. There's no gameplay here. What?
Are you sending that back then?
You can't. They don't take it back once it's open. Maybe I'll sell it to, you know, I can get like $3 back for it at GameStop. But so as a single player game, it's just extremely boring. And I think one of the problems is, unless you're already a fan of the series, you may not know this, but the Call of Duty franchise branched off into two separate divisions, Modern Warfare and Black Ops. They're created by different studios entirely. This Black Ops is done by a company called Treyarch. And Modern Warfare 2 and 3, and I guess whatever one's coming next year, because they seem to do it on the alternating year schedule. So next year, they're probably going to be Modern Warfare 4. And then after that, Black Ops 3. That's how that works. I think they're just better games. They come from Infinity Ward as opposed to Treyarch. So Treyarch does the Black Ops series. And I just, you know, there was something that I also just didn't like about the first Black Ops compared to the Infinity Ward Modern Warfare series. So, and graphically, I like that it's 60 frames per second. You've heard me say that. I think that adds a lot of realism to a first-person shooter. But the landscapes are just, it's more of that, like, you know, city streets with, like, mortar and bricks and explosion debris. And it's just the whole game. There's nothing new to see. There are no new environments. It's so monotonous. Half the time, you don't understand what's going on. Half the time, and they actually screwed up a couple of important things. Number one, it's very hard to tell when you've landed a hit. And that is devastating for the fun of a game. You can fire the gun, you can hit someone and not realize it. And similarly, when you get hit, it doesn't really tell you where you got hit from, what direction. So often I'll just be running to where I think is the goal and I'm dead and I don't know who shot me or why. These are not problems that the Modern Warfare series had. So something Treyarch is doing is just, it's not gelling with me, and it's coming across as a very boring and overly handheld game, holding your way, saying, do this, do that. Alternating between totally telling you what to do to leaving you baffled as to what you should be doing.
So it's not your pick of the week. It's not the be all and end all. What you're saying is demos are your pick of the week, and playing demos before you buy the money.
Well, they play this game now. They know not to do that. When they want a big record-breaking first weekend sale like that in pre-orders, they don't do a demo. You'll notice Halo 4 didn't have a demo. I haven't played that yet, by the way. This, I don't believe, has a demo. I don't think the Modern Warfare have ever really had a demo. Someone in the chat room says, I like games on rails. I haven't got time for wandering around aimlessly. I agree with you, but this is not that. There's some subtle and crucial distinction between the directed open world direction like Borderlands and like an action RPG and this is just okay. Last thing, half the time I'm watching cutscenes.
That's
crap.
I bought a game, not a bloody movie.
Exactly. This is a movie. It's a movie that is the most technical, jargon-filled military movie where you just go, God, I don't know what's going on. I don't really care. I don't care who this bad guy is or what they're doing. I don't care what the strategy is they're talking about or what building they're infiltrating in what city. It's like a retelling, a fictionalized retelling of the Cold War. So it's all this like made up conspiracy stuff that's just nonsense. So it's like, why would I care about the fictional story about the Cold War? And you go from location to location and you just, half the time you're not even playing. You're just watching or you're just, I mean, probably 75% of the time I've spent has not been even firing a gun. It's been moving. It's been stealth. It's been staying out of the light. It's been watch this guy talk, watch that guy talk. So I give the single player of this game a huge thumbs down, and the rest though, review will be forthcoming.
Okay. Totally good. How much did you spend?
$60.
Oh. No! Oh, well done.
I spent 47 on it the other day.
How?
I bet your kids love it, don't they?
I think my mom, obviously my younger one wouldn't play it, but my older one thinks it's great.
You've got to have a sense of humor. That's one of the things I love about Borderlands 2. It acknowledges, yes, it's the same old thing. First-person shooters haven't changed in years. It's silly monsters and silly objectives and silly upgrade procedures, and they make fun of that. It's very postmodern. It's very self-aware, whereas I think that this game takes itself way too seriously and it almost seems like a self-parody in the end.
I have to wade in here because I don't get to play a lot of video games, and I've got a pile of unopened video games, which I tweeted out earlier today. I have got Assassin's Creed 3, though, which I do love Assassin's Creed. And as my day worked out today, I had to go out and run some errands this morning after drop the kids off at school. And I came back, and I had 50 minutes before I had to go and pick the kids up this afternoon from school. So I thought, right, that's it. The cellophane's coming off Assassin's Creed 3. I'll probably have about half an hour or so of gameplay, and I'll be great. I didn't start playing the game in 50 minutes.
Yep.
And that really hacked me off. And I didn't buy a movie. I bought a game. I want gameplay. I don't want your crappy little movie. Because the thing that gets me as well is that levels must be really easy and cheap to do. All you've got to do is create wireframes of where things are and fill them in and say what's solid, what's not solid, and you've got a map. There's programs to do the maps for you. And cutscenes must cost a fortune to make, and I don't friggin' want them. I don't think a lot of people want them. How many people press pass on the thing, you know, go to the next thing if they've got that availability?
Yeah, constantly.
Batwinch has pointed out in the chat room that there is also housework that could have been done. That's that kind of bull is going to get you banned from the chat room. Yeah.
I thought for a minute you were saying it took you 15 minutes to get the cellophane off.
50, mate. I did an update to the Xbox, and by the time and it showed me a tutorial to use the controls I already knew. And
by
it wouldn't
way,
let me
by
bypass
the way, my
it.
My last big insult to Call of Duty Black Ops 2 single player campaign. Walk forward and press X, walk to the left and hold X, walk forward and press X, then press A, then press X. I've played more interactive games on an interactive CD-ROM.
DVD Christmas specials.
There we go. My pick. Now, the other week, I picked the most expensive thing I could possibly find, which was an £89,000 car simulator that was a full F1 car that you could get from Costco. This week, I have a £1.95 plastic bag. And you're going, Jesus, £1.95 for a plastic bag, but it's not just any plastic bag. This is a plastic bag for your camera, for your SLR. Now, I got a request this week. Someone said to me, can you come and shoot our guys doing what they do, but it's got to be in really crappy weather. If it's sunny, don't be bothering coming down. We'll cancel the day. And I've never had photography work cancelled because the sun was shining. Yeah. So here you go. I invested in this. They're on Amazon. They're £1.95, and you get two in the bag. And basically, it's a right-angled... It's been glued. It's been well made. And it's just a piece of plastic. It's got a drawstring at one end for drawing it around your lens. And when you come back here, there's a little hole already pre-cut. So you put your viewfinder through there and clip your viewfinder back on the outside so it seals it in place. And then there you go. You just reach up with that hand, look through your viewfinder, and you're off and running.
Good idea.
And everything is utterly and totally protected. And the one thing I would suggest is if you're out in the rain and you're using this thing, get all the silica gel that you can find out of all the crap that you've bought for the last 10 months and put a big wadge of it in there as well to try and keep down on the... because I've used plastic bags before and they just get really badly up with moisture. But there you go. I thought it was a really cool pick. £1.95. It's called the Rain Sleeve. And you get them on Amazon and you get two in a packet. And they're not disposable, but at £1.95, I suppose they could be. There you go. That's my
pick. Can I also just add in one game where the cutscenes are amazing is Lollipop Chainsaw. And they're all on YouTube. Go and watch them.
There's no such thing, though, as a game that's got cutscenes in it. They're amazing, because it's not a movie. I didn't want a movie. I'm not buying a movie. I bought a game. I want gameplay.
Amen.
Amen, brother.
You expect too much from a game.
Grumpy sods. You want to buy it and play it as well? That's just too much.
What's wrong with you?
I bet you the $100 million that they spent on Grand Theft Auto 4 was Grand Theft Auto 4 was cutscenes. It wasn't levels. Because the levels are in maps that are dead easy to make and follow.
But follow the logic. If games make more money than movies, you might as well put a movie in a game and still get the government money.
You know what's strange, though, to me? I mean, Hollywood studios know that kind of motion capture thing like Robert Zemeckis got into with like the Polar Express and Beowulf and that style.
Yeah.
You always hear about the uncanny valley of motion capture and James Cameron's Avatar was the first to really kind of break through that, except they were blue people, not humans. So there was a whole level that you didn't notice of the unrealism. Given Hollywood's acknowledgement that people don't like to watch stiff, fake CGI characters, it baffles me that the trend in video games is to watch cutscene after cutscene of even faker looking CGI characters with even more stilted, more cliched dialogue that says even less. That's what a strange trend.
I've got to say as well, the cutscenes that were on AC3, they've got real problems where the frame has missed out on the edges and you can see through the heads and that kind of stuff and see inside the mouth and see other things moving other than the mouth on the outside. The wireframe's crap. Sack says, how does the rain sleeve not screw up with rain in front of the lens? I don't understand that. I mean, you'd lose a lens hood for a start to keep the lens dry. So don't shoot without a lens hood. And... if you're trying to get pictures of bad weather, then shoot quick and you'll get still raindrops.
The bag looks cool.
Use an umbrella.
Say again?
Use an umbrella.
Yeah.
Is it holding an umbrella?
That's what I do. When it's raining.
A lot of people suggest that I do other things one-handed as well. Eric, you all right, mate?
The bag looks cool. The bandwidth, at least for me, cut out when you said who makes it, what's it costs, and I assume it's for an SLR.
Yeah, it's built for an SLR, and it's called the Rain Sleeve, and I don't know why I'm doing this because it's on the real feed because my feed's fine at this end because I'm talking. It's made by Optec USA, OpticUSA.com, and it's the Rain Sleeve. It's $1.95.
So $2.
No, it'd be about $2.50 for two of them.
Well, that's incredible because I priced stuff like this in the past, and to get a rain slick for like a camcorder or something, they want hundreds of dollars for a little thing that wraps around it. That looks like it's more than adequate, and I love that you can just throw it away when you're done instead of trying to dry the whole thing out.
The quality of the plastic is kind of like the plastic sleeves that you get on electronics products when they come through. It's reasonably thick and it's smooth and shiny, but it's better quality than a plastic bag that you get from a grocery store or something. So
it looks like all you need. I think the one fear, and I think you already addressed this by saying put some silicon gel in there to soak up the moisture, because you might start getting very much humidity forming. And then
that's not going to be a problem for your picture because you're going to go, your lens is going to be sticking out through the end. So I don't think you're going to mist up the lens or anything. I wouldn't want too much moisture inside my camera if I could possibly help it.
Right, right.
So there we go. We'll be back again next week with the big show as normal. Don't forget to vote for us, please. Please, please, please. And we'll be back with a whole new panel. James might be back then, and Sarah might be back as well, and who knows who we'll have. It could be fun. Max Show tomorrow at 3:30 with Andy and Atco. He missed last week, but he's coming back this week instead. And it's me and Forsman for the photo show, because Alex has bunked off with some lame excuse about work.
Yeah, I had to do some this week.
Have a good weekend. Thanks for listening.
I'm Alex G. Fox, by the way.
All right, okay. Where can we get a hold of you? Chris, where are you, mate?
Chris Vidder on Twitter.
Thank you, mate. Richard, where are you?
Are you getting it on Twitter?
Absolutely. I always do. Alex, where are you?
I'm still at Alex G. Fox on Twitter.
Thanks, mate. And Eric Lanigan.
Twitter.com/Eric Lanigan and EricLanigan.com. I mean, I forgot what I said. Someone's texting me right now. EricLanigan. That's all you need to know.
What, you forgot your own name?
We're crap at this.
Eric, you've got a jingle for your domain name, haven't you?
E-R-I-K-L-A.
Oh, courtesy of James Hart.
I-N-G-A-N. Eric Lanigan.
I know, sing along with you when you say it.
Oh, I love the snappy ending.